People say there are no beings as though they actually understood that, and as if understanding has importance to the development of understanding. I think that there is an error on their part. Let's share our understanding of how experience is cognized. It is not cognized as there are no beings except by thinking in those terms. If I'm not mistaken, the oft-quoted Chero simile says that no beings are to be found. It means found by liberated understanding. But saying beings don't exist is different. Yeah, the point of Dhamma is...
From Phil, I'm at,
Anyway, just let her read the transcript.
Okay, so now you need...
Not black out again, like say on Phil.
The point of Dhamma is the way things are cognized. So all we agree, people are cognized as concepts. So I do questions when people say there are no beings, as though they actually understand, and as if understanding has importance to the development of understanding.
That's why we are here, to talk about whatever appears, to really understand according to what we have heard. No self, no one at all. But it has to be the understanding of reality at the time. Like seeing is seeing. Why did Buddha teach about seeing? Because it's so simple, but no idea or no understanding it as just a reality. Because now it's always I see. But actually, what is seeing in reality? It sees, it's conditioned to arise just to see, that's all. No one there, because it just arising and falling away all the time. So we talk about whatever appears in order to have Panya developed little by little, not I who knows or who understand, but it's a reality. Without hearing, considering, it cannot arise. So in one's life, what's the best thing? Well, praise, honor, or right understanding. Because we live with ignorance before hearing the teachings. But after the teachings, after hearing, one realizes that how far the right understanding can develop to that degree of realizing what one has heard about no one, no being, only different realities arising now, pass away unknowingly all the time. Otherwise, there must be the arising and falling away of realities on and on and on. Is it not a burden? Just to arise and see, and then no more. Nothing's left, only the attachment to that which appears from moment to moment with ignorance. That's why ignorance is opposite of right understanding. So right understanding is not just thinking about right understanding, but it's moment of beginning to understand what is this moment. Everything passes on unknowingly all the time, without right understanding of whatever arises at all. So that's why we know that without the teachings of the Buddha, nobody can tell the truth. So now we listen to the truth, to understand the truth of what? Of everything which is now appearing. Panya knows the truth. Ignorance cannot understand the truth at all.
I think the comment that Tam
read out was that because there's so little understanding of realities, there's no point in saying there are no people, there are no beings. But actually it is the truth that there are no people, no beings. But they think that it's too early to say that there's no point in saying there are no people, no beings, because it's not known.
Just to say? To develop understanding.
To develop understanding. Mm-hmm.
Because if one says that, I see, it's me, it's I who sees, should we follow that?
Yeah, I think what I take from things that Phil sometimes writes on DSG is he feels that when we say there are no people, no things, this is only intellectual understanding, and maybe not even that, because we're nowhere near a stage where we can know that to be the truth. However, I think the response to him is often, while Bunya may not have developed to that degree, there is enough understanding that confidence in the Dhamma allows us to say these things.
Not to say, to understand.
To understand. That's what more panya will lead to understanding that.
It does mean that one hope to get through the highest degree of right understanding, the realization of the Four Noble Truths at all. Because one has to be so very truthful, very sincere, to realize that when one heard about there is no self, there is seeing, it's the point of starting to consider whether that's right or not. Just then, it doesn't mean that we should follow the word and no understanding at all, but from hearing, there can be a moment of there is no one at all. There are only different realities arising and falling away. Is this true or not? This is the beginning to understand better and better when it's not I. So what is it? If it does not arise, can it appear as just whatever appears now?
I think we can grasp at a basic intellectual level that at the moment of seeing, what is being experienced is a visible object and not, for example, table per se. And what is being heard is sound and not amplifier. And that in that sense, in terms of present moment experience, there's no table as such, but just the experiencing a visible object we take for table, or hearing of sound that we take for amplifier. And to my understanding, that's what it means when we say no table, no amplifier. That at the moment of experiencing, it's either visible object or audible object or thinking about previous experiences. Nothing more than that. But somehow when it comes to being, say no being, the words stick in our throat because there is such strong attachment or wrong view when it comes to us, ourself as having reality. But in principle, it's the same idea. So I don't agree with Phil, if this is what he says, that we are just mouthing something we've heard without any appreciation of its significance.
Should we follow our own idea or listen to what is heard and consider what's right? If one considers and thinks that it's right, no self at all, there are only different conditioned realities, why not develop more understanding and leave out all those words from the others or from our own idea? Because what is true?
I'd like to suggest that there's different layers of understanding. Let's just take visible object. We can say there is no self that sees. It's a naturally arising process of seeing. It isn't, there is no seer. There is just seeing as a process. That's a fairly, at least in my opinion, a fairly high level. Important to go from I see to that level. But then there's the next level, which is it's not a table that I see, or it's not a table that is seen, it's a visible object. But I believe that there is also a much even more subtle level. I was watching a YouTube video where they were saying that if I hold my arm out at arm's length and put my thumb up, what the retina can actually process at any one time is the size of my thumbnail. That's all. That's all that is, quote, seen by the retina at any one instant. So this whole visible field in front of me is actually a amalgamation, a consolidation of literally thumbnail size, color, put together, put together, put together. However, what they also have measured is that the eye does not scan impersonally like a television where it goes across row by row by row. The eye naturally looks at areas of high contrast, spends more time there, naturally looks at faces, spends more time there, naturally looks in the center of the field of vision so that there is a subconscious or that there is a selection, a filtering of this visible field by spending more time. Now, I suspect, I was having this discussion with Sundra this morning, that I suspect that an arahat doesn't, when an arahat sees this focusing more on faces or areas of high contrast does not arise, because that's selection, that's filtering. I suspect that may be true. But certainly at my level, getting to, at my stage of understanding and development, getting to that level of differentiating, but I mean, at that kind of like the autonomous level of the eye, just focusing on faces or areas of high contrast, I have not been able to do that. So that's a subtlety that I've not been able to penetrate. Seeing as a natural, yes, that level can handle. That's not a table, that's just a visible object, and not emotionally reacting to it as a table or emotionally reacting to the quote visible object, just treating it like a photograph. Yes, that level I can handle sometimes. But getting down to what is almost like the body's automatic, seemingly automatic reaction of spending the eye, the retina spending more time, or the mind spending more time processing the colors that are faces, rather than than treating all parts of the visual field equally, that seems to me to be well beyond what I have experienced or believe or capable of experience.
It's still I, right, who think like that. While one is listening to the teachings, forget about I or what the theory about this or that. Just listen more on the teachings about whatever appears now. So instead of thinking by oneself about the theory of this and that, we learn to understand the Buddha's words, which is different from the other's word. Otherwise, we will follow other's word, no matter who, the scientist or the doctor or the teachers. But it's not the Buddha's words. So the Buddha's words must be different from the other's words, for sure. That's why at moment of hearing the teaching, it's not I am hearing the teaching. Because usually there's idea of thinking about I in different ways, like you just talked about. But forget all about that and listen just to the words of the Buddha to understand more whether all words are true, so true. It's the truth of whatever appears that nobody can understand without studying, learning to understand what Buddha said. Instead of thinking about right now and so forth and focusing on this or that, what about what is seen in reality just now? Because he talked a lot about what is seen and what is seeing, because no one can tell us about that at all. For example, what is seen? We don't have to think more about different theories, but here, can there be more understanding from considering what Buddha taught about seeing, just seeing an invisible object? Otherwise, right understanding cannot develop at all because thinking of the other's theory. But what is seen now, is it right that no one can be seen or no one is seen at all? Because there is only a reality, an element that cannot be heard, cannot be touched. But now it is seen. Without that which is seen, there will never be an idea about things or right now or anything at all.
So let's put aside the scientist stuff. The Buddha's words, in the suttas, it talks about, at a very basic level, the attachment to visible object.
As no self.
But attachment to visible object that arises, even up into the anagami level, there is the attachment to seeing, to a visible object. Even though there is knowledge that there is no self at already abandoned at the sotapanna level, still there is attachment to seeing and to visible object, without a self.
Or with a self.
Well, let's take an anagami level, where there is no idea of a self.
Just an anagami, not ordinary person.
Okay. With an ordinary person, then can arise also with a self, usually will arise with a self.
And how can one become an anagami?
How does one become an anagami?
Mm-hmm.
First, one must experience the sotapanna,
yes.
Magapala,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'm not sure that was what you're asking.
Otherwise, from ordinary person, how can there be arahata?
Through the four stages.
From now on, from this moment, there can be more understanding.
Hmm.
Otherwise, there can never be understanding at all.
Let me try again. I am sitting quietly here. Sitting in a quiet room. Sitting quietly in a room.
Again. No understanding of what sits. See?
Okay.
No understanding at all about anything. It has to begin. Little by little. Because there's the idea of I'm sitting, but what sits?
There is a sound.
No, sound cannot sit.
No, I'm not talking about
what
sits.
But we are talking about I am sitting. So there must be something which is not I. So what sits?
The body is sitting.
What is the body?
Made up of rupa.
What kind of rupa?
Kama-born rupa, temperature-born rupa, chitta-born rupa, in this case is...
That is thinking. But what you take for body?
Hmm?
What is that which you take for the body? Now.
What
understanding begins here and now. No body, right? But what is there?
There is a body. There is a body.
No body.
There is a physical body. It exists.
Okay, okay. And
there's no body in terms of a no self, but there is a physical body. How does it fit? Through the senses, through the, and it is discerned or observed through the mind.
Who?
The body is.
Who discern, who observe?
The mind.
The mind, so the mind is not a body, right?
Correct.
Okay, so now, please tell me, is there the body or is there a reality?
There is a reality at the moment that, and a collection of these realities.
No collection, just one at a time, so that we can understand.
There is one reality at a moment.
What is that reality?
At the moment, there is a physical sensation, touch.
Okay. What appears at the moment of touching?
For me, at this moment.
For everyone.
No, it can be temperature, it can be smoothness.
But now.
For me?
Yes.
At this moment, there is the sensation of smoothness.
That is thinking.
You asked the question, what is the sensation?
What is experienced at moment of touching? What is there, just there? No thinking about anything else?
There is smoothness.
You call it smoothness?
I called it smoothness.
What?
Yeah, hardness, softness, temperature, smoothness. I mean, each of these.
It's all right. You don't have to say anything, but it's touched, right?
Yes, touch.
Is it the body? Or only a reality?
It is a reality.
So no body there at all. This is the way to understand that actually there's no body at all. If only one reality appears to the right understanding. So it begins to see the anatomy of a reality, from a reality to another reality, to another reality, until all are dhammas. This is the way to see that there is really no self at all. Even the thinking, even the seeing, even the what you call the mind, arises and falls away. No self in it at all. Otherwise, if you sit alone and try to think a lot, but you take the body as my body all the time. But actually, what you take for body, when panya develops, no sitting, no one, only a reality is experienced. Right understanding begins to see and understand that no world at all. Because usually there are six worlds, sight and so on. But at moment of touching, nobody touched. The touching is a reality which can experience that which is touch only. We don't need any word to say whether it's smooth or soft or what. But it begins to see that there is no one at that moment when a reality begins to be object. But that is not enough because there are so many realities appearing now until all realities are the object of right understanding more and more. So there's a confidence of no self, little by little, until it becomes the vipassanayana, the first one, on and on, until the last one, which can eradicate completely, absolutely, ultimately, the idea of self. No more moment of taking, of thinking that this is self, because whatever appears is just a reality.
So, when we say, as you said earlier, the body exists, that would be by thinking, based on experiences of different realities through different doorways, each of which is momentary, and none of which is itself body.
And is this not the word of the Buddha?
The Buddha, when describing rupa, said there is internal and external.
All right. But there must be a rupa, the characteristic which is rupa.
Yes.
It can be at the moment of touching your knee, internal or external. See, It's not a matter of trying to find out, but to understand whatever appears, what he meant by internal and external.
Okay. So while we're on that point, excuse me, if I touch his knee.
Not mine.
Disowned.
This rupa, the rupa at this knee is internal. This rupa is external.
You don't have to think about internal or external at all. But there can be the idea, his knee, not mine, right? Mm. But at moment of whatever appears, no idea about external and internal. But whatever you used to take it for, myself or my knee, is wrong understanding. So right understanding, understand it, that at moment of thinking that it's my knee, it's wrong. Okay. And only Panya can understand what's wrong and what's right. Otherwise, it cannot eradicate the wrong at all.
I'm going to get a little theoretical for a moment.
This is theoretical because it's not direct understanding yet.
And can I just add that
the reference to internal and external is not for us to try and think of rupas that way, but I think to point out that whether it's what we take for our body or what we take for someone else's body, the rupa is just the same. The hardness is just hardness, okay, regardless.
Now, again, according to the Abhidhamma, this hardness of this internal rupa on my knee, using conventional terms, is kama-born. There's a kama-born element here. When I touch, again, excuse me, this knee, because this is, quote, his knee, this is, from my kama's point of view, not kama-born, but this is only temperature-born. Would that be true or not? I know I'm getting a little theoretical, a little off-topic.
So what you used to take for my and his, that is the idea. But what is the reality which appear as a reality?
The reality is
hardness
warmth,
here.
Hardness, warmth.
And hardness there.
Hardness, warmth.
So you understand what you used to take for inside or outside is only a reality at that moment. No one. Like usually one has the idea of I am sitting. See, it's an idea as his or mine sitting. See? But actually, what is there that you take it from my body or I am sitting? Otherwise, there must be always I and my body. In order to know that it's not me, it's not his, it's not I, there must be the reality, the understanding of only a reality, which does not belong to anyone at all.
Okay. Sorry, John, can you repeat your... So now again, I'm coming back a bit confused about why the Buddha in the suttas talks about internal and external if we're not supposed to differentiate, if there's no value or benefit in differentiating between internal kama-created rupa and external temperature-created rupa.
May I say just a little bit?
Sure.
About this is always in one's mind, I and the other, see. Even Buddha didn't teach about this, but there is the idea, my body and his body and the other's body. So what he taught about the truth, that actually there is no I, there is no mine. So what one used to take as my or his is only reality, a reality from moment to moment. In order to erase or eliminate or eradicate the idea of self completely, there must be the understanding of the truth of a reality. What one used to take for me or mine or her or his are only different realities appearing at the time.
And at the moment of touching hardness, this hardness, it may be a kamaja rupa, it may be an
the rupa conditioned by temperature, but at that moment of touching, it's just hardness, just the reality, no thought or idea of how it is conditioned. And the same whether it's touching the other knee or the table, it's just the reality of hardness. So it doesn't matter how the hardness is conditioned at that moment, because it's just that characteristic which appears. But, as Ajahn says, because we're so used to thinking of tables and arms and bodies, so there are thoughts of internal, external, because not enough understanding has been developed. But when understanding has been developed sufficiently and it's just a characteristic which appears, no need to think of whether it's internal or external or the other being or my knee or your knee.
And actually, it's just hardness. Excuse me. And actually, it's not only thinking. You believe that. Because there is not only I, there is also the others too. But the truth is the truth.
At this moment, there is hardness and temperature. At this moment, there is also hardness and temperature. And I see that they are both very simply hardness and temperature, irrespective of whether they are from kama or from temperature or from whatever the... So then, why did the Buddha place importance on saying internal and external? Why would the Buddha place that importance? You're saying it's irrelevant, but it's in the suttas and not just once.
I'm not saying
we do think about me and him, me and the other person, but the thinking follows the moment of experiencing or precedes it. But the moment of actual experiencing of hardness through the body sense is just that. There's no thinking at that exact moment. So if there's right. to be awareness of a reality, then it may take hardness as object or the experiencing of that hardness. And at that moment, that precise moment, or those precise moments, when that hardness is the object of awareness, there is no internal and external. It's the same. So that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
We do think of
me
and the other. That arises naturally.
So why would the Buddha stress this?
Regardless of whether it's me or the other, it's just hardness.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah.
So why did the Buddha mention it and stress it?
Because we take it for my hardness and his hardness, and it's not. It's just hardness.
So he's mentioning it,
the internal and external, just like mentions body or posture or any of these other things, because this is the way we're used to thinking. But to point out that whether we're thinking of internal or external or body or posture, actually it's just rupa appearing.
Okay.
So it's showing the perversion of view, the wrong understanding.
So in other words, just let me restate what I think I've understood. The Buddha said internal or external, not to differentiate or segment, but rather to be all-inclusive in saying it doesn't matter whether it's internal or external, it's just rupa. It's just hardness or temperature. It's not that, oh yeah, there's this temperature and there's that temperature.
It's like when he says awareness while walking, standing, sitting, or lying. It's not to differentiate or to point out different objects, but that regardless of the circumstance,
whatever posture,
it's awareness of a reality. Yeah.
Okay. So when the Buddha creates these lists, you know, gross, subtle, internal, external, all these different bifurcations or segmentations that the Buddha uses in the suttas, it's to deliver a message that it's all.
Exactly. So whether it's gross, subtle, far, near,
internal, external, it's just rupakanda, just the reality, the hardness which arises and falls away regardless, no matter how we're used to thinking of it, no matter how much it's usually taken for utter. Right. Actually, it's just rupa which appears.
And this, of course, applies to not just rupa.
It, to vedana or
right,
any conditioned dharma.
Right.
So any vedana, gross, subtle, far, near, the same. It's just vedana, that's all.
At moment of touching the knee that you take for my knee, right? Is it right or wrong? My knee.
It's hardness. It's the knee is a construct. It's hardness as, that is being touched.
As long as it's a reality, it's your knee.
Why did you add in knee? I'm only talking about hardness. You're adding in me.
You touch what before you know that it's hard? You touch what?
In a conventional sense, it's called a knee.
Okay, so no more conventional when it's right understanding absolute reality.
Then it is what is being touched is hardness and temperature.
This is the beginning of developing the understanding of no self from then on, little by little, until it's completely, absolutely eradicated. This is what the Buddha taught, not the other's words, do this or that in order to experience such and such. It's not in his teachings. I have metta, and I'm friendly.
Rob would like to tell you about the water ceremonies.
We had a long discussion last night, and I apologize if our laughter kept the other bungalows awake. And you're still my friend. I was sharing every Vaisak. I go to a temple, a Sri Lankan temple, and I've done this for 6 or 7 years, that it is my job to pass out the blessed water to each of the devotees as they come. And it so happens in Malaysia that the Hindus come to the Buddhist temple for Vaisak. And so there is a long queue of people receiving water.
Wanting to have it.
Wanting to have it. And it is my job, and the, each little bottle of water has a string, you know, a parit string tied to it. And so...
Possible? The parita?
Yeah, the parrot string.
Yeah.
The parrot string, the protection string tied to the bottle.
Her question was just, is it possible?
Is it possible? For protection? You read the Mahavamsa, there's a story of how it is. But
No, just the truth, anytime.
The truth, no. The protection comes from the mind.
No. From right understanding.
Yes. Okay, the right understanding within the mind.
But it's not the mind.
No, it's the right understanding within the mind, yes. So, for roughly 8 hours, solid, it is my job to...
Why?
It is a pleasure to...
Pleasure is what?
I hand out... bottles of water.
With and pleasure.
With each person, and there is probably about 2,000 people, okay, one at a time, old, young, Chinese, Indian, male, female, and doesn't
matter.
Are
you friendly at that moment?
I am saying, may you be well and happy.
Attachment.
And...
smile.
And I smile.
Attachment.
And I smile.
You didn't say that.
And I smile, yes. And
happily
for 8 hours, there is so much energy, is so wonderful.
Wrong understanding.
As we discussed this last night, what we agreed was that from this somewhat elaborate description, you cannot say there was metta or there was attachment.
Why not? When it's right understanding. But ignorance cannot.
From the description I've given so far, just the external, what appears to anybody who would be watching all of this, some people may say, oh, lots of metta.
What's about wrong with view? At any place, doing like this, pleasantly, attachment to such thinking.
So, while all of this is happening, from a outside perspective, it looks as though it could be metta. However, the only way to know is through right understanding, that through right understanding whether truly metta is arising in this situation or not. So this is the story that we discussed, and my friend...
You were claiming...
you were claiming a friend?
No, because you were claiming that it was with metta. Right. You were doing it with metta.
I was claiming metta, and...
This is an example of metta all day.
I was claiming that there was metta, and I was being challenged that it was like the McDonald's person handing out and being taught to smile. Would you like fries with that? Have a nice day. Here's your have a nice day.
With loba.
With loba. You cannot say for sure.
Yes.
It could be with metta. I could have had that. I could have been having metta. You can't know for sure.
Yes, because usually when there's no right understanding, one might claim that that is metta without right understanding. But when right understanding is there, the distinction between metta and lopa is known.
And so, if there was no right understanding, there could have been metta. There could have been, possible.
Yes.
Could have been attachment.
And this is what
can be anything.
And this is what you wrote about it. You said, as metta arises while distributing the strings and water,
yes,
there is sometimes pleasant feeling at the end of the day, and I reflect back and think, I had a wonderful day. And so on. But
yeah.
So the suggestion was it's with metta.
There were moments of metta. I mean, there's obviously countless...
To give something to the other for the belief that it can protect.
No. It's
at that moment, you give what?
It could have been a...
But you give what?
What I was giving could have been a hamburger. It happened to be
that moment is not hamburger. That moment is not hamburger.
There was... She's
saying a hamburger would have been better.
Yeah.
Maybe you could buy 2,000 hamburgers.
So, there was a, may you be well and happy, being said verbally. May you be well and happy. May you be well and happy. But there was also a feeling of, irrespective of what it was I was giving, there was a feeling towards the recipient of, may you be well and happy. Now, there, at that moment, there was a mixture of, during the whole day, there would have been a mixture of moments of metta without understanding. There would have been some moments of metta with understanding where it was recognized as metta. There's going to be moments of attachment. Maybe a pretty girl comes and may you be well and happy and maybe give me your phone number. So there could have been many different types of moments. One cannot tell by externally looking. And this was, I think, the
but when one laughs, one knows. It has to be pleasant
somanasa feeling.
Pleasant feeling could also be attached with pleasant feeling.
Yes, but at that moment, is there right understanding? Akusala? If not, then it must be lobha.
If there's not right understanding, it doesn't have to be lobha. It still could be kusala, but without right understanding.
When it's not right understanding, and when it's not kusala, it has to be attachment.
Yes, yes.
But what he's saying is that when...
Okay, forget about the string and being any protection and forget about anything.
Right, forget because it's there.
Well, he's saying, okay, even though it may be a bit of nonsense, but the wishing with goodwill, there's still metta in between.
Yeah.
Without thinking about the string.
Oh, no, it wasn't the object
but
was not the string.
But if at that moment you think of the string which will protect and will bring happiness, it's wrong.
That's correct. I understand. The thinking was towards the recipient, not about the string, not about the water.
So without the string, would you say be happy?
I don't normally get people lining up in front of me if I don't have string and water to pass out.
What about the possibility of your feeling of happiness, contentment, etc., being attached to the idea of self doing this? Sometimes we can feel really good when we think we're doing something really good, even though it may or may not be, but it's the self. Feeling like the self is performing something good, something beneficial, which is not the same as a moment of metta. I'm not saying it was all that, but it has the potential to be there.
I think I will come back to Hanoi and file work in McDonald's. Do that and practice metta.
So anyway, that's why we discussed just many different
cheetahs arising, many different kinds. And Rob agreed with
you. Yeah, I agreed. And I think, to me, the most important thing of this whole of our conversation last night is, from external experiences, cannot tell. No way to tell. And when we talked about meditation, I said, a chicken can sit. You have no idea what is going on inside the chicken's mind. Doesn't have to be kusala or akusala, doesn't matter. Anybody can sit. So the external is not the way to know kusala or akusala. It has to be from the right understanding. That's the only way. And so, actually, when I reflected back at the end of the day, there were countless cheetahs.
Which are not known.
And so it's difficult with right understanding at the end of the day. You can't.
It has to be right then. It
has to be at the moment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because now it's just speculating what the cheetahs were
when one had that experience, so it can only be about now. Nothing can be known about the cheetahs then.
If there is right understanding, let's just say hypothetically there were right understanding throughout the day.
What do you mean? Each moment?
Yes.
Impossible.
Say for 50% of the moments, or 20% of the moments.
Or 1%.
Or 1%. Let's go for 1%, yes. At the end of the day, is it not possible to do a reflection, or has that already... Is it not possible to think and reflect upon what had happened during the day with an understanding of the rupas?
I am reflecting.
What would be the purpose?
So what Khun Suchin, you are saying is that there is the idea of a self reflecting.
But when there's no understanding of what is now, self, or seeing, or thinking, or hearing, or feeling, the five khandhas. Five khandhas must be khandha. They do not belong to anyone at all. Arising and falling away in split seconds. So while we study the teachings, we have to remember about that which is taught and to understand better and better, instead of just the word that we can repeat, five khandhas. But what khandha is now? Khandha is that which arises and falls away now. If it's not the understanding right now, it's only thinking about five khandhas, about what Buddha taught, many words, Tathu, Ariya Satta, Paticchasamuppada. But it's I who is thinking about that.
And do you think this links back to Phil's question?
Possibly, but I think the point is you can only know at the time. Understanding would know at the time. If you try to reflect back, that's thinking. And it may be with Kusala Citta, it may be not, but it would be, and if it was of understanding, and if it were with understanding, it would be understanding of what was appearing at the moment. I wouldn't try linking it back to Phil's question.
So getting back to the earlier thread about experiencing hardness through the body sense, I think the point is it's just hardness at that moment. It's not hardness of body or my body or another person's. So whether it's kamaja born or kamaja rupa or uttuja rupa, it doesn't really matter. And these details are not given in order for that to be known at the moment of awareness.
Those details are given by the Buddha to indicate or suggest all-inclusiveness, meaning both internal and external, both gross and subtle, both near and far, and so on. Each of these
Different details are given for different reasons, but generally speaking, the Buddha is describing the present moment reality. I think the theme is that
actually, you know,
seeing is seeing.
It also says past, present, and future. It breaks it down into past, present, and future as well, right? So that would right?
Still
hardness, whether it's past, present, or future.
Just more all-inclusive.
The hardness experienced in the past is just hardness. The hardness to be experienced in the future is just hardness.
What is the past? Reality.
I was just quoting the Buddha.
It's this moment. That which is present now is the past when it's gone. And the future has come. But when it hasn't come yet, it's the future, that's all. But it has to be realities right now. Otherwise, we think about not now. When it's far, it's far. We cannot make it near. When it's near, it's near. We cannot make it far. But right understanding can understand whatever is far or near. It doesn't mean to change it, but it can understand the near and the far is the far reality.
Achan, when you say that only understanding can understand what's metta or what's lobha, but and then I would like to know about the understanding that can understand metta is metta, and understanding that understand metta is only a dhamma or a cetasika, which is not self. Is that the different levels of understanding?
And moment of being friendly is different from at moment of dosa and yes. attachment.
Yes. But then at the moment of being friendly, maybe still have the idea of I
different
am.
Moment.
At the moment of being friendly, it's kusala citta with that friendliness. So at that moment of friendliness, cannot be any attachment, cannot be any idea of self.
Yes.
Afterwards, can be taken for myself, can be taken that there really exist other beings. But at the moment of kusala, cannot be any misunderstanding.
Yes. But then I mean another level of understanding, which is understand that metta is only a cetasika and condition. It's different levels of understanding.
Right, because at the moment when metta friendliness arises, the object is other people. So at that moment, there's no understanding of reality as anatta. So it's another moment that understands the characteristic of metta as a reality. But can follow very soon after, or not at all.
So just as afterwards there can be
wrong understanding that there really are beings, there can also be right understanding that it's just a reality, just a dharma.
Then I want to know also about the object of metta. Can there be metta to the trees?
Only to living beings. And when we say living beings, actually it's citta cetasika that we call a being, but actually not to trees, has to be living beings. Tree has no citta or cetasika.
Yeah, but why is that?
So wishing for the well-being of the other. The tree doesn't have consciousness and accompanying cetasikas. When one wishes for the well-being of another person, one is wishing for their happiness and freedom from suffering.
Life, you're taking care of the tree and doing everything to make it grow better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's attachment. Isn't it?
Let's see.
So in the Vinaya, there is one rule about for the monks not breaking the trees or the plants. So what is the meaning of that rule?
I don't think it supports the notion that there can be metta towards trees.
I think it wasn't it because of devas living in the trees.
That's right. It's a really beautiful story. I won't go into all of it, but it's a beautiful story. About not because there can be unseen beings there who can be hurt and upset that their home is being desecrated or destroyed. And one time there was a dewa whose child was really hurt badly, and the Buddha said. And the dewa went and reported this to the Buddha, and she felt really angry what the monk had done, and was about to strike him down, but she restrained herself, and she went to see the Buddha, and she recalled that story to the Buddha, and the Buddha really praised her for restraining herself, because she said that if I had been angry, I would have set up a precedent. And other people would act the same way. And so the Buddha subsequently made that rule that the monks should not harm trees.
Should the monk have responsibility to cut the tree?
No.
But if one thinks that the tree or the plant itself is like a being that has happiness and one would like it to be free from suffering. Actually, this is wrong understanding.
So actually, can the monk cut the tree?
No, a monk is not allowed to cut the
when
tree.
When it would destroy the guti or things like that, it's all right, but not like gardener.
Yeah, yes.
If the tree has been fallen down, can a monk cut it up for wood?
He can. He can do that. Not the living tree, no, not the living tree. Yeah. And I know that even in Sri Lanka, the lay people are very reluctant to cut down trees because there have been many stories of the three sacred trees, the Bodhi tree, the Banyan tree, and the Neem tree, because they fear that the Dewa or the Rukadewa will harm the people. And there are many stories of people cutting down trees and people dying, but understanding cause and effect.
We say that that is only belief, no understanding?
Certainly, we can see that. Yes.
I guess I mean, icicle grows, crystals grow, right? But we don't think of them as having life and consciousness. So trees, plants also grow, right? Just like icicles and crystals. We were discussing the Vinaya, and John made a statement that surprised me. John is a lawyer, and he said he does not see the Vinaya as a legal system or as a legal framework. And I said, how can it not be? Because it has rules, it has processes, it has consequences, it has case studies and precedents. It's just like a legal textbook. And I agree with you that it is more than that.
Because it's right understanding from Buddha to set up the rule.
Now, there are two aspects of the Vinaya that I would like to ask a question about.
So what's the meaning of Vinaya?
Yeah, what is the meaning of Vinaya? Yes.
Well, that's three questions. Get rid of akusala.
Three questions.
Getting rid of akusala.
Just now, on that point, because I think you had a different
definition. Yours was leading forward or something?
I agree with Ajahn, it's to get rid of akusala. In the strict sense, the word Vinaya means to lead on, to go forward towards liberation, which in a way is synonymous with what Ajahn has said.
Actually, Vinaya is Dhamma, and Dhamma is Vinaya.
They go
together.
If we just look at the Vinaya Pitaka, after every rule, the Buddha says a statement similar to, this is for the what is becoming of a monk, what is increasing the number of believers, what is not for the benefit of the non-believers. It's very, never once in any of the rules does he say, this is for reducing akusala. Never once in any of the rules does the Buddha said, the reason that this rule is here is for the internal development of the monk. It's always for external experiences, external appearances in the Vinaya.
But what's the purpose of becoming a monk?
Committing to spiritual development, yes.
Getting rid of akusala?
Yes. So what you are saying then is that, not looking at individual rules, because each individual rule is very externally focused, you shouldn't slurp while eating,
but
you shouldn't do this.
It's conditioned by citta. When citta is akusala, the deeds and speech must be in wrong way or...
So what you are saying is, let's just take the no slurping rule, all right? That no slurping, monks are not allowed to slurp because the citta behind slurping is going to be attachment to the food, or it's going to be likely to be akusala. Is that how we would interpret that rule? Because the way it says in the Vinaya is, don't slurp because it's unbecoming for a monk. It doesn't look good. Believers,
because unwholesome jitas.
Because it, so, in other words, we should view the purpose of the no slurping rule is because for the monk it's likely conditioned by unwholesome akusala jitas.
And it's inconsiderate to those around because it's not pleasant or comfortable for those around. So it's not kusala, for not considerate to others.
Right. No metta. Slurping. When eating. No slurping. Don't make noise when eating.
And we had the example of arms akimbo.
Don't put your arms... Or wearing a bathrobe while swimming. While washing. Many, many of these rules are presented as for external appearances.
With akusala citta.
I think it's important not to separate vinaya and satipatthana. And then you read it quite differently, all these rules.
Vinaya is for whom?
When you said that it's Vinaya, it's Dhamma, it's mean it's mentioned about kusala and akusala, and that the meaning, right? Yeah.
The monk's life should be most of the time kusala instead of akusala. From morning to night. Otherwise, it's not monk.
And we can say, too, that the Vinaya is to enable people to live together in harmony.
10 benefits of setting the rule for monk.
Yes, and that was one of my points, is that there are the 10 benefits that the Buddha mentions, and one of them is conducive living, but then another one
to
is...
To have less akusala, asaba.
Yes. And this is where I am a little bit confused, is that when he laid out the 10 benefits, it specifically mentions the 10 benefits of why setting up the rules, he mentions less akusala, less defilements. Mm-hmm. However, on each individual rule, he never mentions that. He only talks about what looks good.
But does the monk develop satipatthana as well?
Of course.
So, at that moment, satipatthana understands citta.
And so, why would the Buddha find it necessary to say it's not becoming of a monk? Why would the Buddha, when explaining the purpose of a rule, always just come back with... come back to those points of harmonious living, the what's becoming of a monk, looking good, and never once in the entire Vinaya, in all of the rules, not just the 227, but also in all the Mahavagga and so on, all the rules, it never once says that this is for kusala, though it does say in the ten reasons.
You mean you can follow the rules with akusala citta? Is that what you mean?
I'm wondering why the Buddha doesn't call it right out and say, this rule, hard to second guess the Buddha. But it just seems, and I'm not doubting that I understand what you're saying, I agree with what you're saying, is that the unbecoming behaviors, like slurping and making noise when eating, will be accompanied by akusala. Why would the Buddha not mention this? Or is it just simply because it's always implied?
Why does one become a monk? This is the point.
Right. So in other words, that's already once there is the definition of a monk.
To develop right understanding in monkhood.
Right.
Which is different from lay people's life.
Right.
Okay. And just one other point that you brought up in this discussion was about sila
first. Was that? I think you made a comment about thinking there should be sila first. Can there be sila first or development of sila without understanding? Can there be any sila developed at all without understanding?
I don't remember what I wrote. Can you read what I wrote?
I just made a comment that you said about sila first. That was all.
Oh, was this last night? Or
in the bhikkhu discussion, in the Vinaya discussion.
So I think that the point is that
understanding and sila have to develop together, because otherwise one may follow rules without any understanding, but impossible to continue like that.
Alright, okay. I think we were talking about, again, the person A, the person B, the person A who follows all the rules. That was more precepts, or is that the...
Maybe,
okay.
Because you were talking about Vinaya and precepts.
Right. So what I was saying is a person who is following all of the precepts without a understanding, that's person A. Person B tries but messes up from time to time on the rules, but has understanding and strong faith that the short-term outcome or the outcome for person A is good karma. Person B,
not quite as good karma.
Person B, not quite as good karma. However, they, in future lives, because of that faith and that right understanding, will naturally come back into contact with the Dhamma in future lives. And so there will be a more continuous development. Rather than the person A, they'll just use up their account, their bank account, nothing more. Person B uses up their bank account, doesn't get quite as much in their bank account, but has a good paying job in the next life, if you will. As an analogy, I think that's what we were not just better karma. No, the person A has better karma because it's better results, but person B has the opportunity to meet the Dhamma again and continue to generate.
Jay,
the understanding that he develops is karma.
Sure.
So better karma than person A.
It's just like the discussion yesterday about
metta by accumulation and development. So maybe metta arising from time to time, but if it's unknown, it's not being developed. It's just arising by accumulation. And the same with the sila.
Discussion in Vietnam, you explained about karma asava. So anytime that there's loba, there's karma asava, right?
Karma asava.
Any moment that Loba there is mean Kama Asava there, right?
So Kamasava is the very subtle attachment to sense objects, usually the Loba that's completely unknown, for example, at this moment of seeing, immediately after seeing arises attachment to what is seen, but completely unknown. So it's not like the attachment that arises when we're eating delicious food and everyone knows there's attachment, or when we're laughing and having fun, it's obvious, that attachment. But the asava is the one that is very subtle and unknown as soon as there is seeing or hearing or other experience of other sense objects.
So the character of loba?
It's a characteristic of loba, but there are many degrees of loba. So it's a very subtle one, not the one that is more obvious or apparent, which we may call nivarana or hindrance.
So it only can be known in a high-level understanding.
Very high level, the asavas, otherwise unknown.
So my question is really about ditasava, because considering seeing, but it is still hidden. I brought this up before. It's still hidden that it is my seeing, that I am seeing. It's hidden to me. It's still hidden that it is my seeing when considering seeing. So not enough panya to realize that. Is ditasava is hidden.
Correct. So that's why the very subtle one is not easily apparent, like at a moment of seeing and then maybe a quick impression that this is something taken for something, but it's unknown because it's just a hint of an idea, a very subtle one. So the asavas are much more subtle than when the attachment is stronger or the ditti is more obvious. So actually, that's why panya is really the development of understanding of ignorance and not knowing. So more defilements become apparent and more subtle degrees. In the beginning, just the more obvious
If there is a sudden sound, the mind jumps over to that sound.
Jump.
symbolically jumps. It immediately takes interest in that sound.
It's conditioned. Gamma.
And this would fit to the definition of asava. Because it's not like I'm listening and enjoying the music. It's just, there's a sound
natural.
It's natural, yes. But that is obvious. When there's a sound and...
No, it's natural. It experiences sound naturally.
Yes. I guess what I'm asking is, the natural arising of the taking interest in the sudden sound, that is not subtle. That is easily, that is not...
What we call or think of as taking interest in the sudden sound is long, long after the hearing of the sound in the sense door process and the kusala or ikusala chittas which follow immediately. So, excuse me, I'm about to... So the arahat is the one without asavas called kinasava, without asava. So the very subtle attachment instantly is long before there's any thought or idea of the sound.
Why do I say that it's natural in order to see that all are conditioned? Otherwise the self thinks different. And what about sila? What is sila? Before we can talk about anything further, we should understand, beginning with what is it, so that we can understand better.
He's You are asking me to define...
Sorry?
Cool seat.
Cool seat. Yes, this is now the cool seat. Then redesignate it as the cool seat. So you are asking me, what is sila?
How many silas are there? Gone further.
Asking what is sila is translated as discipline, morality.
What about kusala sila, akusala sila, and abhyagata sila? The three kinds of sila.
Help me understand. I mean, kusala sila, I understand.
What is that? Ordinary morality, something like that.
Kusala is doing, is refraining from doing wrong things. Discipline
That is action. What about sila? Now.
What is sila now?
Yes. We have to understand what sila is.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that sila, you divided it into...
Not me, but the Sampidamaka.
Okay.
Kusala, akusala,
abhyagata. Kusala, akusala, abhyagata. Abhyagata. What is then the abhyagata, and the akusala, sila? How can those exist? Because sila is always associated with a field for merit, not a... that's one of the areas where it's defined as a field for merit. Keeping precepts and so on is sila. So how is it possible to have... Yeah, how can one have akusala, unwholesome, or ethically indeterminate, sila? How can that happen?
Well, the abhyagata, first of all, means not kusala or akusala. For example, the cheetahs of the arahat are abhyagata, because not kusala, not akusala. So actually, sila means manners or behavior conditioned by cheetah. So even now, whilst lifting the microphone, there are manners, behavior conditioned by kusala or akusala.
Okay, so you are then talking about the body intimation rupa conditioned by either the wholesome, unwholesome, or neutral mental states. Is that what you're referring to?
Right, so it's really the behavior conditioned by cheetah.
It is the motivation behind the behavior. It's not so much, it's not the gesture itself, but it is the implication.
It has to be the cheetah itself, right? Because the cheetah, that is kusala, akusala, or avyakata, which conditions this kind of behavior or that kind of behavior. For example, the moment of abstaining from killing with kusala cheetah, it's kusala cheetah that conditions that abstaining, or at a moment of harming, it's akusala cheetah which conditions that behavior.
But the... Okay, I related it back to the bodily intimation, but that's just about communication, not about killing. It's about communication. So... You're not then talking just about bodily intimation. You're talking about the bodily movement. For example, if I were to stab my friend here with the intention to kill, obviously, don't worry, obviously that would be with unwholesome citta behind it.
Right.
And the movement or the action of stabbing is the akusala action.
The kaya karma through the body door is conditioned by that citta.
That's okay, kaya karma, yeah, okay. But this is not sila. Well, how is that sila? I mean, that's not, how can that be sila? If No, I mean, this is not a, if I am stabbing him, it's akusala, but it's not sila.
Different meaning of sila.
Behavior and manners. It's akusala behavior, but sila is discipline. Not generally any behavior, any action. Any action is not necessarily sila.
Ajahn would like to add a bit more.
Okay, I'm sorry. Ajahn, please. We're getting lost here.
Yeah.
I'm getting lost.
Without citta and jetasika, can there be sila?
No, there cannot be sila without
citta
and jetasika.
Only we can talk about sila by way of kusala sila and akusala sila and abhyagata sila, right?
Okay.
The manners, the way the body and speech is motivated by such and such citta. So the disciplines of the monks chose the many degrees of akusala, right?
Akusala or certain, kusala?
We are talking about vinaya.
Yeah, the vinaya.
So we are talking about the manners conditioned by different degrees of akusala. If I think of stealing, taking the other's thing, I move my hand, akusala manners, right? When it's so strong, I would take it, pick it up. But when sati is there, I move back.
Right.
So it depends on citta, whether it is the manners conditioned by citta, kusala or akusala, at each move. So for the monks, Buddha didn't say that it's apatti when it's only thinking, right?
Right.
Otherwise, no monks, because there are akusala all the time, right?
Yes.
So what about monks? The manners and speech should be in monks' way, monkshood, different from lay people. It indicates the degrees of akusala. And the apatti follows the degrees. What level of apatti to go or to pass it or to what? Many stage. So this is akusala sila, not only monk, because realities are realities. For lay people to, I move my hand to pick this up, akusala sila, manners, without body and speech, no way to express the akusala citta at all. This is why the monks rule are different from lay people.
So you are defining sila as a much broader...
The Patisambhita Magga. Talk about kusala sila, akusala sila, and abhyagata sila.
And that's why before, when
only arahats were monks, no need for any rules, because no akusala conditioning manners and behavior. So only when monks were ordained who had manners and behavior conditioned by akusala to the degree of performing such actions, such as the slurping or these other things, were the rules laid down. So that's why it's actually about akusala sila, conditioned by akusala citta, which leads to the laying of the rules.
Fault. So I think where I got confused is I always associate sila with
Mark good.
Good.
Mark, yeah.
And you are
not me.
Sorry.
Patisambhidhammaka Sariputta.
Okay. The Patisambhidhammaka defines sila as broader, as being all behaviors, all
more
actions,
manners,
all actions, all manners, all behaviors.
Also Majjhima Nikaya.
Okay, so where? Help me. Which? No. No. Help me.
Mahasila. See? Yeah. Other words for sila too.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, again, it depends on the understanding of
Chetasi seekers. For example, people read about precepts abstaining from killing or stealing, and they think that by just not killing, that this is wholesome, this is sila, they're following sila. But as we know, so many different cheetahs involved, so only at that moment when one is about to harm and then there is the abstention at that moment, is that the kusala sila involved? That is what is meant by following precepts. So it's not about some kind of outward appearance again. So it's all about cheetahs, cheetah seekers, no matter what one's reading or where one's reading. Not about just kind of following a rule and saying, okay, for 2 months I haven't killed any insects. It's not like that.
Ajahn, I wanted to ask about ditti and vipalasa. You spoke about it on Sunday. And I guess I'm checking to see if I'm grasping it properly. Ditti is wrong understanding of what is appearing now. And that is one of the vipalasas, the perversions. Sanya vipalasa could arise
with all akusala citta.
All akusala citta, whether there is ditti or not.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need for ditti there. It's just a perversion of memory.
At moment of akusala citta.
At the moment of akusala citta.
And vipalasa then, is there.
Pardon?
Vipalasa is there.
The perversion.
Citta vipalasa
is there at that moment too.
Citta vipalasa, that's the one I wanted to
and ask. Also sanya vipalasa.
And also sanya. And that's at the moment of akusala citta.
At moment of ditti.
At moment of ditti.
There are three. Ditti vipalasa, citta vipalasa, and sanya vipalasa.
And they all arise at the moment of akusala citta.
Lopa, when it's ditti.
When it's
sanya and citta vipalasa arise at every moment of akusala, any moment of akusala at all. Ditti vipalasa only arise when...
With ditti. So with seeing, there is no... With the sense consciousness, at that moment, there is no...
Is seeing akusala citta?
No, vipaka citta. So no vipalasa. Yeah. But the subsequent jittas, or is it only in the javana jittas?
Yeah, so only, because akusala
only arises
in the javana. That's right, only in akusala.
After the visible object has been seen, and then a few more vipaka jittas, and then only when akusala jittas arise,
right.
Then
okay.
Immediately it is sanya and citta vipalasa, mm-hmm. As soon as that akusala arises.
And that vipalasa, that perversion, is due to the ignorance.
Ajahn, would you help me to clarify the difference between vipalasa and asava?
Because you see that we can classify akusala by different ways, asava and nivarana and so on. But at any moment when citta is akusala, there must be vipalasa. No matter what degree, asava or oka or yoga or ganda or what.
Could you give me an example to differentiate between, say...
How many asavas are there?
Four.
Four. All are akusala?
Mm-hmm.
So all are vipalasa?
As well.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. Any moment of akusala because of vipalasa.
So for me, that begs the question, why have... Perhaps I'm being naive, it's not clear to me. Why have asava at all if vipalasa are the same? Or
when citta is vipaka, it's not akusala. So no vipalasa with vipaka.
But the asavas are pointing to the very
subtle, for example, the very subtle attachment, the very subtle wrong view, the one that is not known, not commonly known, when there's the oozing out of akusala, but it's not known. But vipalasa also includes nivaranas when it's obvious, when there's obvious attachment. So it includes all kinds.
And for example, in the asavas, no
dosa, but vipalasa includes citta with dosa.
What vipalasa is dosa?
Any akusala.
There is a perversion, sanya vipalasa, citta vipalasa at that moment. So any moment of akusala, there is vipalasa.
So all akusala is included in vipalasa.
That's why one can see the difference between seeing, and then after seeing, usually there must be asava. But for arahata, after seeing, not any kusala of what degree at all. Even asava is completely eradicated.
Would it be correct to say that the Buddha used asava when referring to certain contexts and vipalasa in others? Like vipalasa is more in the process from sanya vipalasa, citta vipalasa, yuti vipalasa, how things progress more on a process side, whereas the asavas are, even though from an Abhidhamma point of view, can be brought right back to the akusala chittasikas, but when describing things as a process, he used vipalasas, and when talking about the asavas and taints, he's talking about the more current characteristics. At the end, they come back to the same thing. Is that a correct understanding?
Would they use or explained?
Okay.
Again, please.
All right. Asavas and vipalasas, at the end of the day, come back to the same set of akusala chittasikas. However, when the Buddha was describing...
Yes, but at the end of the day, not now. Each moment, in order to understand reality as not self, not thinking about the whole day and at the end... This is the study of the words, who's him and who am I and who are we. Otherwise, we take the Buddha's word for our own idea. If we talk about citta, must be one moment, one citta at a time, to understand better about realities right now. Otherwise, it is no understanding of any reality in a day, and then think about reality.
In a similar way, if I look at the Dhammasangani, the list of mental factors.
So it's not you. It's Dhammasangani talks about.
Yeah, when the Dhammasangani talks about in the first verse, the first couple of verses, the list of wholesome mental factors.
Kusala Dhamma.
The Kusala Dhamma. There are 54, I think, and then some extras.
And if there's no understanding of the teachings at all, can we understand what he means by Kusala Dhamma? So it has to be studied carefully, each word.
Yes.
So there can be the understanding what will follow Akusala Dhamma and Abhyagata Dhamma.
And when going through, in the Dhammasangani, that list, it clearly states that some of the terms are equivalent to others. I think Panya exists seven times. Panya comes up a whole bunch of times in different disguises.
Like what?
Right understanding is called Panya. I don't think I can get all seven of them, but right understanding, Vipassana is Panya. Right thought, Panya. Many of them come up as
Dhammavichaya.
Dhammavichaya comes up as Panya
at different moments.
They're from the Ayodhya Sangha. It lists it all as Panya. It just kind of simplifies it all down to Panya. But in the
weak or strong, too.
Weak and strong, yes.
Yeah.
But in the Dhammasangani, it lists them differently because they're in different groups and classifications because the Buddha used them as part of different groupings, classifications, right? And so similarly, asavas, vipalasas, really will simplify down to the same set of chattasikas, but from different according to different classifications
and different point of view.
Okay.
Like when he talked about the vipalasa, about what? The Four Noble Truths. Vipalasa of the Four Noble Truths. Altogether, there are 12. Three of four. Ditti vipalasa, citta vipalasa, sanya vipalasa of the dukkha, dukkha smutriya, and dukkha niroda, and dukkha niroda kalmini patipada. All four ariya satcha. Not understanding. See, vipalasa. That's why those who study Abhidhamma do not understand it. Abhidhamma is now so very deep and very subtle. That's why there can be vipalasa of the four, like the path leading to enlightenment. Vipalasa is there when it's not the right path.
Okay. I know the Vipalasa Sutta, and it talks about anicca, dukkha, anatta, and
the Four Noble Truths, dukkha, dukkha smutaya, dukkha nirodha kamini patipata. All four. Vipalasa of all four. Altogether there are 12.
Yeah, let's look at it at lunch. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of which.
Just to understand that there is no self at all. That's why he taught for 45 years.
And one can see how even up until just before becoming an arahat, how what is dukkha is taken for sukha, how subtle the vipalasa can be of citta and sanya. And
otherwise we might have our own idea if he didn't teach in details about each word.